So when you build a building, the thing that takes the longest is the foundation. And it takes a really long time. So like you're walking, I remember walking and going through on my trips to university years and years ago, and always watching construction projects in downtown Victoria taking forever. They would dig and they would dig and they'd pour concrete, it would go on forever. And then all of a sudden, boom, overnight, then this structure is just built. Because they had the insight, and these construction workers from basic experience, that you have to build a strong foundation for later life. Well, what happens in buildings happens in the spiritual life and happens in maturity. That we need to be able to build a strong foundation upon which we build the visible structure. So unless we have a private, hidden life connected with God, filled with personal accountability and maturity, we will never reach the heights of sanctity. We just won't. And the result is that maybe a few years later, eventually, when all the corners have been cut and all of the cost-saving measures that we've been able to hide in our construction project start becoming more and more visible. And with human beings, this drives me nuts, the way that young people are treated today. And which is why it's rather fortunate that St. Aloysius is the saint of today. Because today, young people are told to basically default their 20s. Go off on your 20s, get an education, it doesn't matter, just be stupid. Because, and the weird thing is that often the adults that in fact encourage this behavior, you can tell that they lament their lost youth, as if somehow youth is better than old age. Whereas the best thing is to make good and wise decisions in your youth, then you live better in your older age, because you built on a foundation. So a lot of young people are told, oh yeah, be stupid and doesn't matter. And then 30 hits and they're like, oh my God, what happened? What am I missing out on? And it's all gone. The choices that we make very early on have a massive impact on who we become later on in life. And this is why, although St. Aloysius is, you know, we talk about youth, but the opening prayer and everything, what's called the collect, mentions specifically his penitence, his acts of penance. Because acts of penance are a way in which you trim the garden of your heart, prepare the foundation of your building, so that you might actually grow according to the pattern that God is designing us for. It's the ability to say, when your body can handle all the booze, I'm not going to drink it all. It's the moment when you can actually exercise and lose weight without too much difficulty to be able to say, I'm going to eat moderately. All of these things gradually develop, and then in old age, you feel the burn. Usually, for instance, if a person lived a reckless life in their 20s, in their 50s, that's when their body starts to go, oh man, I can't believe I played all that much hockey, etc., etc., etc. I hear it a lot now. So the reason that this is important for us is that we don't just say, if it's not immediately detrimental to me, it's okay. No. Because the values that we choose to build upon will eventually impact us later. So in today's first reading, we're given a certain phase in Israel's development. So you have the period of Moses, he gets them out of slavery. Then you have the period of the judges, that it's kind of like a religious anarchy during the period of the judges. The Hebrew people, it's fairly specific. At this point, it's the Hebrew people. They're just kind of a loose association of families and tribes, etc. And they're not quite unified. David unifies all the tribes, conquers the city of Jerusalem and says, this is the head of now the kingdom. Solomon does his thing, the whole thing kind of crumbles, and then eventually the kingdom gets divided into two. You have the southern kingdom of Judah, which is why they're called Jews now, because Judah is the only tribe left. 10 of the tribes are in the north, the kingdom of Israel, as it's called. So there's the kingdom of Judah in the south, there's the kingdom of Israel in the north. And eventually, they start falling into idolatry. And they fall into idolatry, usually out of self-interest. God's not answering our prayers. let's go to the bales, the balls. We talked about that, I think it was not last week, because I was gone all last week, but the week before that, when you have Elijah going after and his little war with the Baal prophets. The whole thing, again, falls apart, and then now they're not only fighting the Philistines, who are a relatively small empire, relatively small kingdom, now they have to deal with the Assyrians. And if you've ever been to the British Museum or anything like that, the Assyrians are the ones that have like sphinxes and weird lions, and it's a very massive empire. And all of a sudden, they're right at the gate. And they conquer the northern kingdom. And the scriptures are pretty clear as to saying the reason why the north was conquered was because they were faithless. And Sennacherib goes to the front gates of Jerusalem, of the south, and starts saying to them, don't believe these lying promises of your God. Look for your self-interest. Look for your own personal benefit, because if you don't, I'm a coming for you. And the prophet's answer is, don't listen to him. Put no trust in mortals. Put no trust in military. Put no trust in all of these things. Stay faithful. And so this massive invading army just dies. You know, actually, the scriptures are slightly vague as to how it happens. But the very fact that extra-biblical records, not just the Bible, but other records indicate that the south, for some reason, did not get defeated by the Assyrian Empire, does give a certain indication as to how miraculous it was. It was a short trip. Short trip right down there. And somehow they got stopped. But the way in which that God wants us to grow in this is the way in which Sennacherib was attacking them out of fear for losing what they want, fear of not following their dreams, fear of not attaining their hopes and their joys. And that's exactly how young people are manipulated today. If you don't sell your soul and your faith, then you're not going to have a good career. If you don't sell your... sometimes your chastity, you're not going to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. If you don't sell all of these things out, then you're going to lose everything that makes life meaningful. A Christian's answer is pretty straightforward. I prefer to lose them all to keep him. Lose them all to keep him. We will never truly be free until we can say that. Because the kingdom of the north, in the end, was enslaved and then thrown into nothing. And then even when the south was conquered, not by the Assyrians, but by the Babylonians, for the same reason the north was conquered, because they gave in, it was even in their exile that they learned that true fidelity to God is true freedom. Paul will tell us in this coming Sunday, for freedom Christ has set us free. God wants to liberate us from all that binds us, from all that conditions us, from all that controls us. But the first step is to build a rock-solid foundation through truly realizing that which we can live without, avoiding that second portion, not being so picky about our food, giving deference to people when we don't need to have our own way. And the more we do that, the more we can live for others. Because I have seen the fruits of people living a life of selfishness on their deathbed. All of those innocent choices that they thought meant nothing, then they go to their death and they wonder why their family thinks they're annoying and selfish and why everyone just avoids them. And I've met saintly people, very, very saintly people, go to that very same bed. And the whole family is willing to just lay down everything, even strangers, even if their family hates them. They even die joyfully. Not because the pain isn't present, not because life isn't difficult, but because they know who awaits them.